The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, this is Stephen Hines, author of Zombie Fabulous, Rebirth Defect, and Valedictorian USA. And you, my friends, are listening to the PBD cast with John Orlando. Soak it up, suckers.
Organized crime are a thing. Met in May, now I'm running the ring. My gig is tap straight to the point. Collect my fee or I bust up the joint. I am a darling, mischievous pixie. I am a wraith.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD cast. I'm your host, Mr. PVD MVP himself, John Orlando, bringing you episode number 161. And I bet some of you are a little bit confused. You're probably saying, what's up with that music, John? Well, that music connects to my guest for this episode, Mr. Ted Sikora. Ted has two comic books out, one called Apama, the Undiscovered Animal, and the other one called Tap Dance Killer, in which you just heard the music that goes with Tap Dance Killer. And I'm going to ask you to make sure that you listen to this entire episode, because at the end of the episode, I'm going to play this great tune. Coco Smith is the young lady who sings the song Tap Dance Killer. And think about it. You're getting a great conversation with Ted as he's going to talk about his creative endeavors. You get a little bit of me here. In a few moments, I'm going to talk about a few things going on with yours truly. And you're getting a sweet new song. So this is such a great episode. If you're joining for the very first time listening to the PVD cast, welcome. You picked a heck of an episode to start with. And if you're a longtime listener, you know it's going to be a great conversation that I'm going to have with Ted. So again, stick around through the entire episode and hear Tap Dance Killer, sung by Miss Coco Smith, at the end of episode 161. You won't regret it. There you go. I said it. You won't regret it if you listen to this great tune. But with that, let's jump into one little thing that I would like to talk about first here. I'd like to just say, I told you so, which probably I shouldn't really get a big ego about this, because I think it's probably when I tell you the little story that I have to tell you, you'll probably go, duh, John, it was pretty obvious. Well, it just came out here today that apparently, as I ranted about this on episode 160, the Stormy Daniels bust at the local gentleman's club here in Columbus, Ohio, was indeed a setup. And I know people were going, what? Shocking! Well, I'd like to thank, first of all, my man Lemmy Caution for sending this my way. And that's a name I haven't said in quite a while here on the PVD cast. But nonetheless, a whistleblower has reportedly given a statement to a Southern Ohio newspaper stating that some high-ranking vice officers in the Columbus PD had planned about 2 days in advance to bust Miss Daniels. But yet the article doesn't really say why. Was it politically motivated? Was it revenge for, her involvement with President Trump? Who knows, ladies and gentlemen? But again, as I said on episode 160, I thought it was bullshit to begin with, and it just seemed too much like a damn coincidence for all of those things to line up. And again, obviously we see it's true, but weirdly enough, it hasn't been reported on any of the major news outlets yet. So let's see how many days it takes before this story breaks here in Columbus, Ohio, unless you're listening somewhere else. Like maybe you're listening out on the West Coast in Oakland, California. Maybe you're listening in Atlanta, Georgia. Maybe you're listening in Washington, D.C. And you know what? I know some people are. And how do I know that? Well, that's because I'm getting some great feedback and statistics from Libsyn. And that's what I wanted to talk about here real quick. I know last week with episode 160, there was a lot of headaches and a lot of stress and aggravation on my behalf. And there's probably some people that are still not in the know. But I officially moved the PVD cast over to Libsyn. And I did so, as I explained before, because I want to get better statistics. I want to get a better idea of who's listening and who isn't and what episodes are being listened to and whatnot. And while I'm in the infancy of using Libsyn, I'm already getting some feedback that as of this recording of this intro, 12 people have listened to episode 160. And I have a listener in Oakland. I have a listener in Atlanta, a listener in Washington, D.C. I don't know who those are. Now, granted, the rest of them are all here in Columbus, Ohio, which, again, that's home base, so I'm not surprised by that. And while I would like to have 120 listeners or 400 listeners, I'll take 12 right now. I'll take those, okay? I'll take those. Look, I'm realistic. I know that I'm probably going to lose some listeners in the short term, but I think in the long term, having things on Libsyn will allow me an opportunity to spread the word about the PVD cast. And while in the short term I may have taken a step back, I think that I'm going to take two or three or four or five steps forward here in the long term. By the way, if you haven't, you must subscribe to the PVD cast through iTunes again and as well through Google Play. And if you're listening on Stitcher Radio, you're going to have to add it again to your personal favorites. The switching of the RSS feed caused those three outlets to have some problems. So again, if you have any questions, please let me know. Shoot me an email. Hit me up on Twitter. Let me know things aren't working. Contact me through Facebook and let me know that things aren't working if you have any problems. I think anybody out there that uses some type of software like a podcast catcher, if you're catching it from my website, pvdcast.com, you're going to be fine. And I think some of the other periphery outlets are still using the RSS feed from my website, so there shouldn't be any interruption there. Just the big ones. I mean, the big ones. And hopefully here soon, I'll be able to drop it on Spotify and maybe iHeartRadio as well, so giving me even more chance to reach my audience. So, all right, enough about me. Let's talk about Ted Sikora. Ted Sikora is a creator of a comic book called Apama, the Undiscovered Animal, and another comic book called Tap Dance Killer. And both of these books are very, very interesting, especially in the way in which, and we'll get into it in our conversation, in which Ted and his co-creator kind of brought out their game plan. They kind of go in reverse, so to speak. And there's a ton of great, interesting stories that Ted has about the creative process for these two books. So I'm not going to waste any more time. I'm going to get to the Audible ad here right now, because as you know, today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Duh, I just said it. But anyways, you can get a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/PVDcast. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And for you, the listeners of the PVDcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the chance to check out their service. I mean, we've talked ad nauseum about all the different genres, from westerns to science fiction to romance. No matter what the genre is, Audible has a book for you. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/PVDcast. Again, that's audibletrial.com/PVDcast. And with that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'm sitting down with Ted Sikora to talk about his books, Apama and Tap Dance Killer. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sitting down with Ted Sikora here this evening via Skype. Ted, how are you this evening?
I'm good, John. How are you doing?
I'm doing well now that we got all the technical glitches out of the way. Fingers crossed.
Yes.
But let's talk a little bit about your endeavors. You are the co-creator of Apama, the Undiscovered Animal, as well as Tap Dance Killer. And we'll talk a little bit about both of those books here. But you're a Cleveland resident.
Well, I live in Akron now, but yeah, I grew up in Cleveland. Lived in Cleveland most of my life, actually. But yeah, when we got married, my wife, she works in Kent. So we decided to land ourselves in Akron.
I gotcha. It comes across in your books that you're very proud of your Cleveland heritage, and rightfully so. But are you a fan of all the sports teams?
Baseball, it takes me a long time to get into baseball. Usually the end of the season, because I'm so into the NBA, which is going to be tough now, but you know,
that was going to be my next question: are the Indians picking up the slack for what happened in Cleveland and in regards to the Cavaliers and LeBron?
Man, that's a great question. for me, it's like I got so into the basketball thing, and when it ended, there's almost a weird sense of like, you know, I need to just be away from sports for a little while, okay. You know, so I haven't jumped back into baseball yet, nor football. You know, obviously our football team has been pretty, you know, historically bad. So I think it can only get better. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah. Big sports fan all my life though.
Well, you know, the Indians are in first place in the AL Central, so that's something to, if you want to jump back into sports there, Ted, you got something to hang your hat on that's positive. I know.
And we love that AL Central, man. I'm so glad we're not in the East.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly. Well, let's start with Apalma. It was a comic book that you created with Milo Miller, correct?
Yep.
And Apalma is Cleveland's own superhero.
This is correct.
And originally, he was a character in an independent film called Hero Tomorrow that you directed. So it seems a little bit backwards, especially in today's society where you have a comic book and then the movie comes. You kind of worked backwards. You started with the movie and then went to the comic. Is that an accurate assessment?
Completely, and we do everything sort of ass backwards, unfortunately. We're the company that does a trade, and then we do the single issues after the trade has come out, you know.
Well, that could be your calling card. That's a good niche to have, maybe.
the publishers love it.
Well, let's talk a little bit. How'd you get involved in directing the movie?
Okay, so Milo Miller and I met at the University of Akron, and we were huge fans of independent film and comic books. So, you know, we graduated, and, you know, we started bouncing this idea back and forth. Sort of a Spider-Man meets Taxi Driver idea, you know? And what it boiled down to after 3 years of us writing the script was, it's a story about a guy who has an idea for a superhero, so the struggling comic book creator. And his idea is based on the premise that so many superheroes are creature-themed, but all the good ones have already been taken. Spiders and bats, Wolverines, you know, Black Panther. So he makes up an animal that is so powerful yet stealth. We just haven't discovered it as a society. And his superhero is going to be based on that. And he calls this an Apalma. So that's part of the humor of the movie. You know, he's making these cold calls to publishers, trying to sell a superhero based on an animal that doesn't exist. So when they don't bite on it, his girlfriend, who is an aspiring fashion designer, takes pity on him. She has a networking Halloween party coming up. She makes him a costume of his own character for this Halloween party. And once he has that, he's not content to just wear it on Halloween. He starts running around the neighborhood trying to figure out what would it be like if I actually did pose as my character. What is it like to be the Apalma? And the movie debuted at the big Comic-Con in San Diego, and it played a lot of film festivals. And one of the things we heard over and over again is his idea, Apalma, is really unlike anything in comics. And have you ever considered making this into a comic book? So Milo and I took that to heart, and we did the first issue, which is the story of a, you know, you almost forget everything I just told you, because this is a separate world. This is the book our character would have published.
And that was going to be my follow-up question, is that there is a big difference between the way in which the character is introduced in the film and then the way it's introduced in the actual comic book itself.
Yes. So the book is about a Hungarian ice cream truck driver in Cleveland who unlocks the spirit force of the Apalma creature. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's a standalone series.
So with that character in itself, was it based on some of the people that you saw growing up in Cleveland? Because it seems that is a Hungarian, you know, ice cream truck driver. Seems to be a really specific type of character to create.
Well, yes, okay. To all that, you know, my best friends growing up. The one guy's father was a direct immigrant from Italy, his mother from the UK. Another friend of mine, both parents came directly from Germany, the house right across the street. My friend's parents came from Croatia. So I always had this sort of international thing going on just in my neighborhood growing up in Cleveland. And my father had a tire store, and I was always, you know, changing tires with these guys. And it was my first job. And it just, when we were trying to think of an alter ego for Apama, it just seemed like that type of character really isn't represented well, I think, in the comic book world. You know, you don't see this guy who's sort of more of a neighborhood dude. You know, he's not brilliant like Peter Parker, you know, and certainly driving an ice cream truck for a living doesn't, he's not a Tony Stark, right?
So, right. Yeah.
We give you, I think, a very different kind of alter ego.
Right. And one of the things I really liked in doing my research, and even saw a little bit of it in Tap Dance Killer as well, Cleveland is as much of a character in your comic as any other character. And, you know, I think into, clearly that's a connection to your film, your background in film, because you mentioned Taxi Driver or Shaft. Those movies really had to have New York City there as the setting, because it becomes part of the character of the movie as well. So was that a conscious decision that you made, that, you know, Cleveland has to be in this because this is what I know, and it's going to become as much of a character as anything else?
Yeah, what I've always found with the you know, the sort of sci-fi stuff that I like is that there's something, there's a grounding in something familiar, you know. Okay. So that we have this sort of basis with which to kind of compare the supernatural, or, you know, to gives us that point of view that we don't just get so far out there into the, you know, stratosphere with these ideas. And I think when you ground it, you know, in a city like Cleveland, and we do take pains, we photograph areas for the artist so that, you know, these details are really accurate. And I think, you know, we're dealing with an artist who lives in Spain on Apama, and, you know, he's never been to Cleveland. So we take a lot of photos for him. And I think it accomplishes what we set out to do in terms of that yin yang of sort of the reality and the supernatural.
And you know what? I never really thought about that you're, because I was going to talk about Benito. That never dawned on me. Then I never would have thought he's never been to Cleveland. And to be accurate, you probably have to school him a little bit on the architecture and the layout of the city.
Yes. You know, and he'll do his research too. You know,
sure. Yeah,
he
sure
sings and surprises us, but there's nothing like being there, you know,
and
in lieu of that, what can we do but, you know, make sure that he's got everything he needs. And same with Tap Dance Killer.
Sure.
A lot of photos, a lot of references, faces. So we do use actual people who are citizens of the city. You know, the story takes place with Tap Dance Killer. Near West Theater in Cleveland is a location within the comic, and people who actually work there play themselves in the book. So, yeah, there's a lot of weird meta stuff going on around the culture.
Well, let's talk just a little bit more about Benito. Benito, is it Gallupo, I believe is how it's pronounced?
My best interpretation is Gallego.
Gallego, okay, Gallego. Yeah. How did you discover him? Tell the listeners how you, because I think it's a very interesting, and I guess you would say for yourself and for Milo, I guess it's flattering because you had a lot of people that were interested in being the artist for this book.
We put an ad out in DeviantArt.com at the time, which yielded, I think, about 150 submissions from all over the world. And the thing we had going for us was this was a spinoff of this feature film. So we had a trailer that went with it. So I think there was a little more credibility to it than I think a lot of the job postings. And there really wasn't even a strong second choice. We liked Benito so much, and not to say that he was far and away the best artist, but he was the best artist for this project because he you look at his art and it feels like the Bronze Age or the Silver Age. It just, yes. there's a style to it that, you know, I've always found that when you talk to comic book readers, their favorite era is usually when they started collecting. You know, it's rare, I think, that, you know, there's something that hits you later that's so impactful as the first 5 years or whatever. So with Benito, that's what we felt. Like, this looks like it would belong right next to those old comics we grew up loving in that Bronze Age 70s sweet spot. So, and he really, what I like about him is he makes people look real. Like, you know, not everybody with sort of this cute button nose and everybody looks like a supermodel. Like, he gives you a nice diversity of cast, and his architecture is terrific.
And from that book, Apama, you started a second title, shall we say, called Tap Dance Killer, who is, would it be fair to say she's the antagonist of Apama?
She is, it's complicated with Nikki.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I think the antagonist, the nemesis in Apama is Regina. So she's like that hippie, psychedelic, sure, flower child cult leader. But Nikki is brought in. Apama gets to a point, I should say Ilya, our main character, gets to a point where he's just feeling like no matter what he does in the superhero life, it's not going well. And he's out on his route with a truck, and this cute woman just hails him, calls him over, and, you know, Nikki St. Clair, and she's like, you ought to come audition for this musical, man. And it's a community theater thing, and she's real flirty with him, so he decides to, what the heck, I'm going to go do this. And they're putting on this horror show musical. It's titled Nothing Like Vaudeville. And Ilya, because of the way he's so strange at the audition with the superpowers, he actually gets cast as the lead, the freak, in the show. And Nikki St. Clair is cast as the tap dance killer. And then there's this supernatural element that I don't really necessarily want to give away here, but it mm-hmm. locks Nikki in her role. Mm-hmm. And two of her castmates, Sir Terror and this Fletcher Warlock character. So they become this sort of surreal 1920s mob, but in present day, and they decide to take out the Cleveland Mafia. And it just creates this kind of interesting thing with these villains versus villains. And when, you know, we just touch on it in Apama, but it was really clear that character, Tap Dance Killer, she was being liked and shared on our Facebook page thousands of times. And that wasn't happening with Apama, you know. So, you know, there's something more to this character. I think we can explore it and, launched her into her own series and describe it as sort of Punisher meets Rocky Horror.
Do you fear that she will become more popular than Apama? Or is that even a thought in your mind?
It's not a fear.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. No. If it happens that if either one of them, whatever they get popularity wise, I'm thrilled. So, okay. And I think in some ways she probably already is more popular. Like her single issues are selling more. It's hard to say, but no, I'm not going to be worried about that a bit.
Well, your artist for Tap Dance Killer is Nicholas Harrison, who to me has a much more modern style of art as opposed to Benito's real gritty kind of 70s feel to it. So could you talk a little bit about how you discovered Nicholas?
It was a similar process, but this time we used a site called Digital Webbing. So 5 years later, Digital Webbing is the place to post your looking for artists, job searches. Who knows, 3 years from now, it'll be a different site. But if anyone's doing it now, digitalwebbing.com, that's the one. So we got about 200 artists this time around. And I was actually searching for two different books. Because there's a third series that's going to be starting later this year titled Bloom, which is the story of Apama's nemesis, her origin, Regina. I really did like Nicholas. He does have a more contemporary feel, but he also has sort of a nod to the old school as well. I think this is a, it's interesting to me because I think of Tap Dance Killer as completely contemporary, but like a lot of the reviews are like, oh, this is a, you know, this great throwback book, Tap Dance Killer. I'm like, oh, wow, we're just so baked into the 70s. We can't get rid of it. No matter
what. See, and I don't see that in Tap Dance Killer, if I may be honest. I see a more, like, I want to say, and when I say more contemporary, I'm talking, you know, the mid-90s to early 2000s type of style of art. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I'd kind of agree, but it's just interesting the perceptions out there.
Yeah, most definitely, most definitely. Well, let's talk a little bit about the inspiration for the character of Tap Dance Killer, because Nikki St. Clair, who you named after St. Clair Avenue in Cleveland?
That's right.
Okay. Right downtown, yeah. Man. Right downtown.
Yeah, I used to be a courier, and that's another thing I like about working in Cleveland. I used to deliver blood to hospitals when I was in college, so you get to know the city really well, all the back roads, the shortcuts. And so when I'm doing these scouts, I often have an idea right where I need to drive to take some photos and that kind of thing. But like, okay. St. Clair Avenue, I remember thinking I really want Nikki to be named after a street, and I thought about a few other streets, but I just knew that I knew her name was going to end in St. Clair. And then it was actually a conversation with my wife and daughter, and one of them threw out Nikki, and Nikki St. Clair just sounded like music. So
there you go.
Yeah. So that's where that came from.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the inspiration for the character, because it ties into a little bit of punk rock and musicals and whatnot. So can you tell the listeners how you came up with the idea for Tap Dance Killer?
Yeah, this goes back further than the movie.
This goes way, way back, folks.
It does, yeah. So the movie, you know, that came out in like 2006. But back in 1990, I had an original band. Well, I started to write some original songs for a future band. And one of the first songs was this Welcome to the Freak Show. And I just thought, there's more to this song, this story. So I kept writing songs about these characters in sort of a surreal 1920s. And they were all kind of villains. And it was a bit of a play on, you know, vaudeville, you know, a vaudeville performer is called a vaudevillian, but these are like vaudevillains. And at some point I was working on my brother's keyboard, and there was a tap dance sound, and I decided to use that as a rhythm, and then Tap Dance Killer came out of that, just this song, you know. Uh-huh. And the band, really, we were called nothing like vaudeville, and we sounded nothing like vaudeville. You know, that was sort of a double entendre, you know. It was a hard rock kind of dark alternative band. But what happened is my mom was looking through the newspaper, and there was this Make Money This Halloween with a haunted festival. They were looking for like performers for a haunted festival, for a show.
Okay.
I talked to the promoter and I said, you know, I've got this band and we do this sort of concept album, and I could probably take four of the songs, like a verse chorus from four of the songs, and we could turn this into a mini musical for 15 minutes. And I wrote the script, presented it, and he went with it. So we put this thing on for the month of October back in, I guess that was 93. And it went over really well, and in a lot of ways better than the band ever did. There were people who kept coming to see it, and they were actually adding their own sort of Rocky Horror type timed lines to the show. And we thought, well, let's just turn this into a full musical, you know. And not having done any theater in our lives, my brother and I embarked on that task. And in 94, we rented out the Fantasy Theater in Lakewood, right to the west of Cleveland. And we put on this show. We did a cast album. It got national distribution, I should say international distribution. And I kept kind of working on it through the years. But it also got on the back burner during the Hero Tomorrow time. Mm-hmm. But at some point, I asked a jazz vocalist in town, Kai Allen, to sing a version of Tap Dance Killer. And I just loved what she did with it. And from that point on, I thought, man, I really think this character would be best portrayed by a black woman. And then when it was time to do her in the comics, Nikki St. Clair was the name, and we, you know, drew some concept illustrations, and there she is.
Were you always musical as a kid? Were you always interested in music? Did you play the guitar or some other instrument or whatnot as a kid?
Guitar was my instrument. I got pretty serious about it around age 16, though.
Okay. Who was your favorite band? Or who is your favorite band?
Well, it evolved. There was Kiss for a while. Van Halen probably is my go-to answer for my all-time favorite band, Van Halen, with Roth.
Oh, you beat me to it. I was going to say, which version?
Well, and it's not, and I, you know, if we're going to get into this, I want to defend Sammy a little bit and say, if you were to ask me what are Eddie's 20 best guitar tunes, they're all from the first four albums.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. one other quick question here that's somewhat musically related, since we were talking about naming characters. Will you be naming any characters after the Odeon?
The club?
Yeah, the old club in the flats.
No, I don't know. I haven't thought of that. What does the word Odeon mean?
I have no idea. I've just been to several concerts up there, and when we were mentioning places in Cleveland, I'm like, I wonder if he'll make one the Odeon.
Yeah, that could be interesting, like some sort of space-aged, some alien.
Yeah, there you Odeon. Go.
I'm sure Odeon means something.
It's got to. I don't know what that is, but how long do you have both these books planned for, Tap Dance Killer and Apama? Are you going long term with these, or do you have an end game in mind for when they might wrap up?
I have some end ideas, but there's no end in sight. Okay. You know, we're planning them to just be ongoing. And
And Apama, real quick, is on, what, issue 7 or 6?
12 would be the next one.
12, my bad. Wow, okay. I saw there was a collection there, and I thought I read my research with 6 issues, but there's probably...
You're not incorrect. The first collection had 5 issues in it, and the second one has 6 issues in it.
There you go. Okay, all right. Well, and I apologize there.
No problem. This was that ass backwards thing we did. So we, you know, we were releasing these books digitally on Comixology, and then when we got to issue 5, we thought that's the end of an arc. So then we did the printing, and then we decided we would hold back all the next 6 issues and just release them like a Netflix series in volume 2, even though there covers everything in this volume. We just were always afraid of printing single issues for some reason, and then when it came time to do Tap Dance Killer, and it was going to be released as a number one issue, we thought, man, we've never had our number one Apama out on the stands. So we've gone back and kind of remastered, and we're releasing Apama monthly nationally in single issue form for the first time to coincide with Tap Dance Killer, even though it'll get way ahead because Tap Dance Killer is kind of quarterly and Apama monthly. But eventually they'll be caught up.
And then you have the third story that you mentioned that is coming out, and you did say that title was Bloom, correct?
Bloom, right on. It takes place in 1969, and it's about a woman who is recruited to go into the woods with a photographer, and they're both kind of transformed during this photo shoot.
Okay, when is that going to be kicking off? Do you have a start date for that, or?
Originally, I thought we were going to do the whole book at once. It's going to be like 110 pages, but I think we're going to split it into 3 single issues. So he's around page 50, and I want to get us far enough along so that they can be released regularly, like maybe every other month when they're done. So I think it could come out this year or very early next year.
When you said he, are you referring to Milo again, or do you have a new partner that's helping you out with
Bloom? I'm the writer on Bloom, and I'm sorry, the artist is Butch Mappa. So this is a third artist that we're dealing with here.
Okay. And is Butch local, or is he like your other two artists? Is he more international, so to speak?
Yeah, he's in he's in the Philippines.
Oh, okay. He's in the Philippines. Okay. So you're keeping that international flair, so to speak.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about a couple of other miscellaneous things here real quick. What is your favorite movie? Who is your favorite director, since you have a little bit of background there in movies.
I love Alejandro Jodorowsky. He did. Are you familiar?
That name rings a bell. Did he do? Is he the Russian animator that did that movie Nine?
Or no, he's from Mexico. He did El Topo and Santa Sangre, Holy Mountain. His stuff's really crazy, surreal. I love it. I'm a big David Lynch fan.
Okay.
You know, my favorite movie, it's always kind of changing, but probably this week it would be West Side Story.
Oh, okay. Is that because of the are you a fan of musicals? Cuz there's a great question on that, because a lot of times I've been slammed by my fellow movie nerds because I'm just not very well versed in musicals. I've only seen like 2 or 3.
Oh yeah, no, I love them. I love them.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So is West Side Story the best musical ever?
It's got to be close. The music is unbelievably great. The cinematography is you can just hit the pause button and it is a painting every time. I mean, it's just unbelievable cinematography. If you get a chance to check it out on Blu-ray or something,
okay,
you cannot go wrong. It's astoundingly beautiful.
Okay. All right. Do you have any other aspirations for getting back into movie making?
Well, yeah, I would love to develop these new stories into some kind of series or a film. You know, the Apama world that we've told in the comics, Tap Dance Killer. I've been approached about the film rights to Tap Dance Killer already. So,
Wow.
Yeah, not that there's anything there, but I've been somebody asked, so I will. And it was somebody from the West Coast that I didn't know. So there.
Well, there you go. All right.
Yeah, we're gonna keep pushing that. But you know, we're still so new to it. Only issue 2. You know, so.
Right. Real quickly, when you create a book, because I do believe that for Apama, you did a Kickstarter, correct?
We did.
What's your feelings as a creator when it comes to the Kickstarter campaigning? Because I know many creators that have been on this podcast, they love it or they hate it. There's not a lot of people in the middle. It's either, yes, it's the greatest thing ever, or, my God, I hate it, but it's necessary. Where do you fall?
Well, I do really like it. It is not fun, you know, but it's great to... If you can work a contact list, like if you have the wherewithal and that, you know, you've got a big email list that you can push, a lot of Facebook friends that you can talk to about it. I think it's great because you can sell to a lot of people directly. There's no publisher involved. You know, there's no, you know, what am I trying to say? It's just... It's kind of a necessary evil, I think, for
what independent we're, publishers.
Yeah, for independent publishers, you know. Yeah, it's we can use Indiegogo as well.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, we've used Kickstarter, and it's gone great. We raised $14,000 the first time, and $13,000 for the second one. So I'm planning to probably do one for Tap Dance Killer when she gets to like her. Maybe done with her fourth issue, because then we'll compile the last 2 issues of Apama with it, so you'll be able to get her whole arc starting with the Apama story.
Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, well, that could be coming sooner than later, actually.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Tap Dance Killer, I think issue 3 is slated for sometime this fall, correct?
It will be out in November.
In November, there you go. By the way, Ted, I'm going to pencil you in that you are on the... Kickstarter is a blast side of things, okay? I'm just going to...
Yeah, right. I don't know if I was quite in I might be that middle ground.
You might be the middle ground. You know what? I'm going to push you in the middle ground. How about that? You'll be the only one there. You'll have it all to yourself, so...
No, I think I would belong on the blast. I think that's fair.
Okay.
It's been way better. You know what? It is a lot of work, but it's so worth it.
Sure, most definitely. I noticed that on your website, and we'll talk about all your website and your social medias here towards the end, but on your website, you had a page that had a bunch of different comments and reviews from other places. So what's it like for you to see comments from people like Tony Isabella and Alan Grant when it comes to your projects?
Oh, it's thrilling. I've known Tony all my life, practically. My mom used to take me to his comic book shop when I was, you know, maybe 7 years old. He opened a place downtown Cleveland called Cosmic Comics. And it was maybe the first comic shop in Ohio. But my mom used to work with Tony at the Plain Dealer, you know, even before I was born.
Okay.
So he's been a friend of the family and, you know, a mentor. So, yeah, getting comments from him that are positive, it's really an honor because I've respected his work for so long. And I Alan Grant, I met him at a Comic-Con and I just said, hey, man, I'm a big fan of your work. I wonder if you wouldn't mind taking a look at our book and see if you have any thoughts on it. Mm-hmm. And he wrote the most glowing letter I've ever got from this whole process. You know, he said it was the most enjoyable comic he'd read in 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Wow. I mean, it's this kind of quote that's like, who even believes that, right? But I mean, he did, and you know, he went on and on about it, and we quoted him on the back of Apama Volume 2, and I have since been sending him, you know, anything I'm working on just to get his take on it, and he's been really good about notes, but I loved his stuff growing up. He did the Batman Judge Dredd crossovers. He did those first Lobo miniseries, which really made me fall in love with the Lobo character. Mm-hmm. For him to kind of really get it, you feel some validation that, you know, you're doing what you're setting out to do.
And it's great to see that people like Alan Grant and Tony Isabella are willing to help the new crop of writers and creators, you know, because it's very easy when you're that famous or that well-connected to not bother, you know? So that's really cool. That's really cool.
No doubt.
So who are some of your inspirations in comic books? Like, when you sit down to create, who are some of the past creators that inspire you?
Yeah, for me, Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, Jack Kirby, like, you know, that's the sort of, that's Led Zeppelin right there.
Yeah, gotcha.
And then, you know, years later, I really got into Doug Mensch. I love, Milo's a huge Steve Gerber fan, as am I.
That's a name that's not tossed around too much either. Gerber's kind of an underappreciated creator.
Yeah, maybe, you know.
He is. And
a lot of the, you know, we do a lot of that narration, that old school narration in Apama, and a lot of the reviews have picked up that it seems like these guys are into Gerber, you know. So that's, we wear that with a scrappy nose pride, I guess.
Excellent. Well, you just had an appearance this past weekend, and so therefore, let's tell the people where some of your upcoming appearances are coming.
Yeah, okay. I will be doing the show in Cincinnati. Let's see. I'm just pulling up my calendar here so I can be accurate. It's the NeoCon, which is in Cleveland on August 19th. Before that will be Steel City Con, the weekend of August 10th through the 12th.
And that's out in Pittsburgh, PA, I presume?
Yes, Monroeville. Then, yeah, in September, the 14th through the 16th is the Cincinnati Comic-Con. I don't know if that's exactly what it's called, but there's a Baltimore Comic-Con is the 28th through the 30th, and then New York Comic-Con is the 4th through the 7th. And then, of course, there'll be Akron Comic-Con, November 3rd and 4th.
Well, you are going to be a busy man traveling all around.
Yeah, and I love the cons. It's been so much fun, and it's nice now that we can sell single issues. We've always been, you know, you're pitching people on the floor that don't know anything about your book, and you know you've got a $20 price point on it, and it's nice to be able to give them a $5 option with the issue one, and you know, it seems more people are willing to take that gamble.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, as we're getting up here to our time limit here, I would like to point out that the line in Tap Dance Killer that made me laugh and giggle like a middle school boy was "grassroot ass root," said by one of the mobsters. I believe it was when they were talking to the city councilman or whatever. I don't know why, Ted, but if you wrote that line, kudos to you. It made me giggle like a child. I just, I don't know why.
Well, yes, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
So, run down for the listeners real quick, website, all your social medias and whatnot, so they can get in touch with you if they would like to.
Thank you much. Yeah, herotomorrow.com is that's our shop. Facebook.com/herotomorrow. There is my Twitter, which is Ted Sikora, TEDSIKORA, and my Instagram, TEDSIKORA as well. I think that's about all of them.
Okay. Well, Ted, thanks for taking a few moments out of your very busy evening here to sit down and chat with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up this episode. So, please, stick around. There you go. My conversation with Ted Sikora. I hope you enjoyed it. I met Ted this past spring when space was happening, and he actually was behind Brian and I. And, you know, Tap Dance Killer is a real fun read. I've read the first two issues, and it's really fun. And I find it interesting that they kind of worked in reverse fashion with the movie first and then the comic books. But, hey, man, whatever works. And that's what I love about talking to creators, to find out how they come up with the ideas and the methods that they use to get their ideas out there. So anyways, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to wrap things up here and roll on out of here. But let me tell you where you can get in touch with me. You can get in touch with me through a variety of different ways. You can shoot me an email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can find me on Twitter @pvdmvp. You can even leave me a quick message over on the Facebook page of the PVDcast. That being, of course, facebook.com/pvdcast. And as you know, you can get this particular podcast from a variety of different places. PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly, is probably the easiest way. But, of course, it's available through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, Pod Paradise, Libsyn, and a whole host of other places. So, hey, wherever you get your podcast from, just type in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to add my name on the end of it, PVDcast John Orlando. And I guarantee that if you're platform carries the PVD guest, it'll be right there. So with that being said, don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, Tap Dance Killer, sung by Coco Smith, is going to be our closing music. So if you want to check out more of that sweet music that you heard at the beginning of this episode, just stick around here. Just stick around, because I'm going to tell you to stay righteous, to stay independent, and I'll chat at each and every one of you later. Take it away, Coco.
Organized crime or a thing, met in May, now I'm running the ring. My gig is tap straight to the point, collect my fee or I bust up the joint. I am a darling, mischievous pixie. I am a wraith and I'm getting my kicks. See, if you're not on time to pay your dues, you're gonna meet the soles of my shoes. Don't want your love, don't got the time. I'm the tap dance killer, where's the next crime? Tapping away till my next killing day. The tap dance killer, a child at play. Toe, heel, step into the room. Dig, tip, tickety-tap, boom. I tried to go straight, it made me hate it. Nothing ever beat the sound of street at my feet. Don't look to me to be your guide. Sometimes the blood only makes me slide, 'cause I got rhythm tapping in my shoes, and something that'll cure all your blues. Don't watch your love, don't got the time. I'm the Tap Dance Killer. Where's the next crime? Tapping away till my next killing day. The Tap Dance Killer. Child at play. Don't want your love tonight. I'm the tap dance killer. I'm the tappity tap, tap, tapping around and around and around, round, round, round. No matter the venue, they all know that I'll tap, jab, stomp, shoot, kill 'em with style.